The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Lakeisha Hunter went from running with street gangs to running her own food truck. This is WBBM Noon Business Hour host Rob Hart, and we talk about her mission to feed Chicago and help kids find the right mentor on this week's edition of At Issue. Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on At Issue today. And welcome as well, your mentee, correct? Carrington Thomas. Yes, thank you for joining us on the program today. Lakeisha, you have been on the Noon Business Hour a number of times, and I feel like this is a great venue for you to tell your very interesting story, because I feel like the 3 or 4 minutes we have on a Friday afternoon, not nearly enough time to cover all of the ground just about your remarkable life. I mean, you went from running with gangs to owning your own business. So let's start with, where'd you grow up?
I actually grew up in Inglewood, which is on the south side of Chicago, coming from the projects on the what we would consider the low end, which is 22nd and 43rd Street, and really, really finding the foundation of transition into the gang in the Inglewood area.
What was it like just growing up, and when did the gang, which one, by the way, when did it come a-calling?
So it was started young, actually, in grammar school. Moving to Inglewood, you either had to have a strong family or be a part of a strong gang. So in going in this area, I needed protection. I needed protection for me and my sister. And the first week, actually, of living there, we were challenged confrontationally. And I'm like, okay, I got to find something to do so we can walk around this neighborhood. So I joined the gang. And in that was sixth grade. That was sixth grade where I found myself having to join a gang.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I went to CPS as well. And when I was in sixth grade, we had this thing at, this was Sutherland School in Beverly, and it was called, it was Peer Helpers. And essentially it was your fellow classmates. You would have these scenarios where someone would come along and play the part of the gang member and say, hey, you better join the gang. And then everyone else says, no, I'm not. And that was the lesson that everyone was supposed to learn. But in real life, when confronted with real life situations and confronted with situations that could put your safety and the safety of your family in jeopardy, it doesn't work the way it does in the classroom.
Oh, no. That's picture perfect. Your first instinct is survival. You know, and again, I'm the big sister to the little sister. So it's my responsibility to keep her safe. So if you're challenged and you have a family that can back you in challenging the gang or the streets back, okay, you're winning. But I didn't have that. You know, I was living with my grandmother. She couldn't go out and do anything to these people. And I didn't even involve her, you know, so to keep everybody safe. Okay, yeah, let me go ahead and join this gang.
And then when you join, what did you do? I mean, outside of having the sense of belonging and outside of having a sense of just there's other people out there who are here to protect you against this other group of people that wants to do you harm. You know, what did that require? What did that entail?
That required commitment. It's not like what we see on television where you're jumped into the gang. In some places you are, but in here in Chicago, that wasn't one of the initiations. So we, you know, you had to be proven. You know, you run with the crew, you see what you can do. They'll challenge you to do things, break the law, steal, fight, you know, things of that sort. And then you need to learn the literature, we call it lit. You could learn literature of what the gang is and what they represent. And it's amazing how this stuff is really created. The mission statements, the purpose, the creed and your bylaws and all of these things is very well structured. And I learned all of that and I was good at it to the point where my first position was to train those that was coming in. You know, so that was my first leadership role, to train and teach what that particular gang was about.
But also, I think in a way, it it explains the appeal of it.
Absolutely.
Because you come from a situation, I've talked to other people too who say this, they come from a situation where, you know, maybe they're really, you don't really have much of a family, or there are very few other institutions in which you feel like you have a sense of belonging, or you feel like you're good at something, or you feel like you're important. And it sounds like the gang provides that.
The gang does provide that, if you're willing to put in work. It is work, and it is daring work. You have to go to some great extent, to an extreme extent, to prove yourself that you can be trusted, that you won't snitch, and that you can maintain whatever position you're on and be able to still respect. This is then. This is the early 90s. So now it's totally different. So gang was really about respect then. So I was good with fitting in until it got challenging, where I had to now fight people I cared about or come against people that I befriended who's not a part of that gang. And so that's where it became challenging. And then with my grandmother being of age and I'm having to do disrespectful things that she wouldn't approve of, whether it's drugs, dealing drugs, whether it's carrying firearm or staking out, you know, the opposition and, you know, putting my family in danger. So that's where, you know, the really tough parts came in, that where I had to keep my family safe even from that.
Now, the next part of the story, and you've told this on the Noon Business Hour before, and that is you go to culinary school and you found your mentor in culinary school. How did that change your mindset?
So I was in high school when first I could not go to the high schools I wanted to follow my friends, my gang. So because the school system, CPS, was afraid I would lose my life going to the schools. They didn't see me living past the age of 18 at the rate that I was going. So Inglewood was the only school that accepted me. Talk about feeling, you know, rejected as a teenager. So I signed up for culinary arts because it was something I knew how to do. My grandmother taught me to cook. I was cooking at the age of 8, cooking for my siblings in my mom home, who was, you know, affected by drugs and alcohol, poverty-stricken neighborhood. And my siblings had to eat. My brother would go out and hustle and make money and bring food back, and I would cook it based on what I did in the kitchen with my mom. So I knew how to cook. And when going into high school at that time, you had to choose a career. You had automotive, you had computers, and you had culinary arts. So I chose that. And this particular teacher saw all the trouble I was getting in, but she really admired the cooking skills that I have and saw the potential. So one day I run into a fight, and she challenged me. She said, hey, you're either going to stay with your gang and go down a death row, or you go choose culinary arts. You cannot be in both. You cannot be in my class and be a part of your gang. So that challenged me, and it was in my head. So it kept nagging at me. So I was open to receive what she had to say because I trusted her. But now she put it in my face. That was pretty brave of her to say to me, of all people.
And how long did it take you to commit after that challenge was laid down?
It took about a month after I was faced with an obstacle of really having to choose, because there was a peace treaty going on and in the school. And I'm looking around and I'm looking at all these gang leaders who are way bigger than me and older than I was. And I didn't like what I saw. And then it's like a dream almost, where what she said to me, that challenge came to mind. And I decided that day, okay, I have some way out. I have a way out. And I was able to make my way out through culinary.
Now, you continue in culinary school, but did you quit the gang? Did you formally quit the gang? Do you submit a letter of resignation? How does it work when you want to get out?
So it's harder when you're in leadership, okay? So it's not as easy when you're in leadership. So I had to go to the person I was assigned to. And I knew how to do that because whatever I did it well. I studied it. I studied all of the information I needed to know about the particular gang I was in. So I used that to get out. And without telling you what that is, I was able to finesse some of what I read and some of what our laws are. And I'm like, this is what I'm doing, and that matches this. So I was able to get out because I was bettering myself. And when bettering yourself, that take away all of the, you know, the requirements you have and commitment you have in that gang, and they released me. And then as soon as I was released, that particular gang was abolished.
Now, I think the question is, you talked about how you're having a hard time getting into certain high schools, and then you wound up at Englewood High School by default. But in a way, that has got to be an incredibly lucky break for you.
Absolutely. I take it as it was a God moment. You know, it was definitely designed, orchestrated by God. It was that teacher's first year, culinary teacher, first year teaching. She has never taught before. And she took this job at this school. And I'm so happy to be in this school, in this classroom, where she wasn't afraid, like other teachers were. She wasn't afraid to challenge me. When I asked her later on, she said, yeah, I was afraid. I wasn't sure what you was going to do to me. She's like, but I had to challenge you and help you make the decision that you needed to make anyway.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. My name is Rob Hart, and we are talking with Lakeisha Hunter and Carrington Thomas about the power of mentorship. Ms. Hunter is the founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. So now you're in culinary school. You are learning this craft, and what happens after that?
What happens after that is I'm now challenged with more things. I'm recognizing my disability. I was labeled with learning disability because I was suspended so much. You know, I didn't, living with my mom and being in a drug infested home and neighborhood, my mom wasn't home a lot. So I was at home taking care of the younger siblings. It was eight of us, and I'm number two. So I'm tending to my siblings and not attending school. So then we were taken away from my mom and placed with my grandmother. And so I didn't go to kindergarten, Head Start. I went to first grade. I didn't go to second. I didn't go to third. I didn't go to fourth. I went half of fifth. And then when I'm steady now with my grandmother in sixth grade, they realize I don't know anything. And so I had to, but even in trying to teach me, I'm suspended the whole year from fighting. I got arrested 26 times in my sixth grade year. Suspended 10 times for 10 days each. So I missed the whole school year and made me repeat. So now I'm facing the learning disability in high school. So now I'm trying to break that challenge. So here go another challenge. Now my insecurities are showing. So you have to deal with that, which make you want to go back to the gang you was a part of, because guess what? Everybody had a learning disability or nobody's paying attention. So that's what came after that, taking on those challenges. And then once I had that team of teachers pushing and they recognized this and not wanting me to go back to that change, to that back to where I was and who I changed to, they pushed, they tutored, they stayed after school to where I was able to get it. And now I'm on the honor roll. And now I'm competing in cooking competitions and then received a scholarship for cooking to college and went on to college, got my degree. And then I got my bachelor's degree, and then got my master's degree, and now we're here.
And so the kitchen, it saved your life.
It saved my entire life. It saved my entire life.
And so when did you get the idea to start That Jerk Spot? And second, what is it about?
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Caribbean and jerk cooking that just is so appealing to so many people.
It is. I mean, because it's infused with a lot of flavor. It brings a background heritage, you know, roots of family orientated homes and, you know, me cooking with my grandmother and just throw anything in a pot and it tastes phenomenal. You can't do that with every cuisine. You can't do that with every ethnicity. You know, that's soul food. Soul food come from the heart. And Caribbean food is just that. It's soul food. It's flavorful. It's a work of art, you know, with no limits. So that jerk spot came about with me tasting somebody's food I didn't like. And at the time, somebody challenged me then. Well, do something about it. Oh, don't challenge me. So, and I did. And then before you know it, I'm making 200 tacos a day out of my house.
I think the one through line through all these stories is that someone came along and challenged you, whether it is a teacher, whether it is teachers, whether it is a relative, and now you have to start your own business. And that is intimidating.
Oh, yes.
I don't care who you are or where you're from or how much formal education you had. When you actually hang up the shingle yourself and you file the paperwork and that's your business and it's up to you to make it work, that's pretty intimidating. But for you, it was just another challenge.
It was just another challenge. I wasn't intimidated at all. I don't know why I wasn't. I didn't know anything about opening a business, but I do have business mind concepts, you know, where I know what it should look like through this same teacher, Darlene Austin, who was my culinary teacher, who taught me business, you know, at the back end of it, the office end of it. So I wasn't afraid of the challenge. So and my first job out of college was an internship at Navy Pier, Odyssey Cruises, where I was a hostess. And in 6 months, I became the floor manager. So I wasn't afraid of being in front in the business arena. So leadership, I guess, always been a part of who I am. And simultaneously, I was asked to be a teacher at Westinghouse High School, culinary teacher for the Pro Star. So I was a Pro Star student. Now I'm a Pro Star teacher, while restaurant manager now at Navy Pier, Odyssey Cruises, and Mystic Blue Cruises. So business has always been in me. And now it's like, now I got to take on my own. But I wasn't fearful of it. I just knew to do it. And when I did it, it worked out. It was a lot of red tape, but a challenge. Red tape meant challenge, and I'm going to succeed that challenge.
Now, at what point in starting that jerk spot did you think, hey, we got something here. This is actually connecting. Business is good. And this is actually a sustainable product.
To be honest, I didn't think about the sustainable product. I thought about the youth. So I was in the center, my brick and mortar that I was renting, the restaurant was in, and that's where Carrington started, was in the community of a lot of young people. And these kids coming in and buying food, and we had a candy store in the restaurant as well. And I craved more of that attention than I did of the customers that's buying from that jerk spot, because now I'm challenging the kids. Hey, if you get this on your report card, you get to get anything on this menu. And you get your name and your picture get to go on this wall. Remember that? I called it Junior Achievers, you know, and that became a thing around the neighborhood. The kids coming, Miss Keisha, can I bring you my report card? So that fueled me to rise above the ordinary.
Now, this is, you know, the power of mentorship. And Carrington, I want to bring you into the conversation. I think, and that is, you know, what brought you to work on the food truck, and how has that affected your life?
Well, basically how it affected my life, I feel like at first it's an inspiration and it gives you a different perception of life. When you cook food and hand it to somebody and you see the smile on their face, it just gives you like a warm feeling in your heart. You're like, man, I just really did that, and they love it. They enjoy it. It's like, who doesn't like to eat, right? So I feel like before I met Chef K, I was going down kind of a wrong path, caught a drug case, caught a gun case, and she seen better in me, you know? So that's when she's like, hey, come try this out. And I think I was actually one of the first mentees that she had. So she's like, hey, come try this out. I'm like, you know what? Why not? So I started that. And then I seen her mission, like she said, it was for the youth. I'm a youth at this time. So I was like, I feel like this is something big to be a part of. It's something big to be a part of. So it definitely changed my perception of life, because, like I said, I was going down the wrong path, living the fast life. Everything's fast. I'm like, hey, I don't care what happens. Now I'm thinking more broader about life. So I feel like that's how it put a change into my lifestyle, and it'll change a lot of youth's lifestyle.
Now, what is it, and this is for everyone, you know, what is it about the kitchen that can be a place of redemption for so many people? Because that was one of the lines in Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential that always jumps out at me, is that everybody who works in a kitchen comes from all sorts of walks of life, and you know, they may have had a checkered background as well. But once you're in there with the ovens going and all the people running around, if you can do the job, you can do the job. It does not matter where it doesn't matter where you came from or how you got there.
Definitely. So I feel like as having a group in the kitchen, it feels good when you're working with a team. Like, I grew up all my life playing sports, so I'm a team player. So it's like when you're in the kitchen, you take that on the court mindset into the kitchen, and the goal is to get the job done. So when we working as a team and you see us feeding a group of people, everybody come in and they're happy, turn on music, they're dancing, everybody's just jovial. It's like that brings a good feeling to you, and it just makes you be like, I really did this. I put the when food is good, what we say is, man, you put your foot in that. And that right there, that one sentence right there, be like, yeah, I definitely did. I created this food right here. Good flavor, good spice, and I got a positive reaction from it. That's what it keeps somebody in the kitchen.
They don't look for me anymore. They look for him. Carrington back there. I'm like, okay, go ahead, Carrington.
I'm the suspect.
So it's really about safe space. You know, you safe to be creative. You safe to express yourself. I'm not judgmental. I don't think I know everything. Yes, it's my restaurant. It's my food truck. However, you are allowed to bring your creativity to the table. You know, if it work, it work. I'm not selfish. Like, grow me. You know, I'm open to it. So I think if they're confident, then they can, you know, instill in other people, because that's the only requirement. You keep the integrity of what it is that we're doing here. All you have to do is go out there and pull somebody and do the same thing. That's my only requirement.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We're talking with Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot catering business and food truck, and Carrington Thomas, who is a mentee and works on the truck. Now, Lakeisha, you're talking about growing up and how you missed numerous years of school just because of the circumstances in which you found yourself. And you managed to find a mentor and find someone to challenge you and pull you out of that. But there are thousands of kids in similar circumstances who don't find that mentor. Yeah. And it just seems like that may be an impossible task to solve. So how do you feel about rescuing other Lakeisha Hunters out there?
Sometimes that impossibility and it feeling impossible, it weighs on me. Only because I care. I'm genuine. You can't fake genuine. You know, either you are genuine or you're not. And these young people in these streets can see it if you're not, and they will confront you about it. And I have the burden to help. Like, I'm constantly thinking of how can I be their solution. Constantly thinking about creative and ingenuitive ways to bring them in. So I changed my garage into a kitchen, a culinary kitchen, because it costs too much in these commissary kitchens. I can't afford it all the time. And I have students that call me, not students, but participants and young people that get my number and text me, chef, this is whomever. And I really need somewhere to go. I got to clear my mind. Like, I don't want to die in these streets. Imagine getting text messages and emails like that. That's heavy. But I pray myself through it. God give me the strength, and it pushes me forward. Like, okay, this is why. Whenever I get heavy, somebody like Carrington or someone that I've mentored reach out, hey, chef, and they show me something, and I get encouraged all over again. I'm not going to reach everybody, but even if I reach one, I've done good. I want to be their solution. I'm a solutionist.
Everybody in America seemingly has an opinion on what is happening on the south or west sides of Chicago and how to fix it. You both have a unique perspective on what really is happening in Chicago, and what are we missing when we have this national conversation?
we're missing the communication with the young people, with the youth. We're throwing our ideas at them instead of asking them, how can we help? You know, my solution may not be what they need, you know, so I'm going to ask. I'm not going to just, no different than a restaurant. If a customer's having a bad experience, I'm not going to just throw you a dessert and think that's going to fix your situation right at that moment that you're upset at this restaurant. I'm going to ask you, how can I change your day? How can I change your experience? You know, so we have to ask them, get them together and ask them, what do you need? What is required to get to you, to communicate with you? And we don't listen. These kids are really, really smart. And they see that we're not listening to them. We hear them, but we ain't listening. You know,
I feel like that's the biggest separation right there. It's people always tell us instead of wanting to hear our rebuttal. So it's like when you constantly getting told something, now you don't want to listen anymore. So I feel like that's the biggest separation right there. Like, the youth definitely have a voice and they need to be heard. They need to be heard.
We're putting a muffle over their mouths when we don't listen. When we don't intentionally listen to change. To change us and to change what we're doing, not necessarily changing them.
When you talk to people today who are coming into want to be mentored or they want to help out, and they talk about what's happening today on the streets, how much of this, when you hear the stories, do you say, oh, this reminds me of the way things used to be back in the 90s? And how much of this is unique to today? Because if you're trying to deal with peer pressure in the 90s, it was analog. And now there's a whole social media component to it that is vastly different than the way things were when we were growing up.
That is correct. That is correct. There's no leadership now. There was leadership then. There was street leadership that we listened to, that we had to adhere to, and we had to respect, even in the gang. Now everybody is their own leader. So now they're clashing. You have no one to instruct, to guide, and direct. They're their own leader. That's why there's a block right here and a block right here with two different leaders, and now they're clashing, but you're only a house apart. How does that happen? So they're going off of their own mojo, if you will. They're going off of, they listen to me. Oh, okay, now I'm a gang leader, or now I'm a group leader. You know, so now they're taking on the responsibility into themselves, and now it's dangerous because there's no structure. There's no structure. Gangs, when I was coming up, you weren't cussing in front of grown-ups, in front of women. You weren't raping children. You would get jacked up. That's unheard of any gang. If we hear that, it's over with. Now it's acceptable. And there's no repercussions behind it. So now they're running wild because we fed communities. We gave back to school events and book bags. Yeah, we did stuff on the side that we shouldn't do. But ultimately, we took care of community. That's not, they don't have that concept. And they're raising themselves now. That's a big thing, too. Parents are not in the home. Children, because youth consider themselves grown at 17, 15. And that's the way the school system is treating them. My son is 18 years old. I don't get a call if he's missing school. They're calling his phone. How am I to know and how am I to correct that if I don't know what's going on? So we're putting a lot of power into the children's head instead of the parents. Parents can't come to the school anymore. We don't open the doors for the parents. Parents got to have a an appointment. As to before, my grandmother could walk up to the school anytime she want and look at me sitting in that seat or not sitting in that seat, and which give you fear. These kids have no fear. These young people don't have the fear we had.
Lakeisha Hunter and Carrington Thomas, thank you for joining us on this weekend's edition of At Issue. If you'd like to hear the program again, you can listen at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and now the iHeartRadio app. Until next Sunday, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.